Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Kyle and Patrick's Still Yet to Be Named podcast. As always, I am your host, Patrick McEwen, also known as the Lacrosse Film Room Guy. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Kyle Devitt, Inside Lacrosse's gear and lifestyle editor. How's it going, Kyle?
Pretty good. Pretty hyped. Our pre-show was lit, as the kids say. So we're going to have to live up to that.
It was. For those of you unfamiliar, I think we've talked about this before, I think, but we always start talking about what we're going to talk about on the podcast, and we end up sometimes talking about stuff that overlaps with what we could talk about on the podcast, and because we don't have to filter ourselves when we talk about that before the podcast, sometimes it ends up being much better than the actual podcast.
Yeah, I did debut my Canadian GM accent that we're going to save for the next pod, and I think it was a hit, so it was good to get that material out.
Well, it had an audience of one. I enjoyed it.
One person laughs, I've done my job.
I do have a proposal for the podcast name.
Okay.
So, given that we don't really have a name, we kind of have just taken to it the way mathematicians and engineers name things and just name it after what it is. And so, like, the title of the last post for the podcast is just the Devitt and McEwen podcast.
Right.
And so, being that in some ways, more important than the name is the way that you can reference it on Twitter, I think maybe we should just call it the Devitt and McEwen podcast, because then it can be the DMP.
Okay.
Which is, it kind of sounds like DMV, but not. Which is somewhat ironic, because neither of us are from the Baltimore area.
Okay, that's true.
And it provides a really good shorthand to reference on Twitter, because you can just be the DMP.
So you're saying D and P?
No, DM, Devitt and McEwen podcast.
Okay, good.
D as in dog.
Got it.
M as in mom.
Because D and P is bad. But, okay.
Yes.
I'm with
yes.
you.
Yes.
That could be problematic for our sponsors.
That would not be an appropriate name.
It's not good.
An appropriate abbreviation, most likely. Too many potential other references.
Yeah. No, it's good. DMP pod? DM pod?
No, because the P stands for pod, so you don't have to say that. It's just that it can just be on, like, on the DMP.
I don't know. I like to have my hashtags with a little more meat on them, but I'm into it. I think it's a good workshop. Exercise. It's a good suggestion for sure. I'm into it.
Okay.
Let's try it out.
Okay. I think it's as a reference to the podcast. I think if we can experiment with it potentially.
Yeah. Will we call our followers like DM peons? No.
Oh yeah.
That's
maybe,
too much.
Maybe.
That's not good. DM.
I feel like peon is kind of insulting.
DM Patriots. I don't know. Potentials. There's a lot of things. We didn't think this out. This was not part of the pre-pod.
I feel like if we actually have fans, they're going to have a name. I feel like you have to name themselves.
That's fair.
Like, did Beyonce come up with the Bayhive? Or did somebody... I think somebody else started calling them, referring to themselves as the Bayhive, didn't they?
I believe so. Yes. Yes.
Like, it's got to occur organically from our many dozens of listeners.
I can assure you that people do listen to the podcast, though. So thank you for everyone that listens. We're not trying to make
yes.
fun of you.
Yes.
We're trying to credit you in a way that's plausible and appropriate. That's all.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't listen. Obviously, I wouldn't waste my time doing the podcast if I didn't think you should listen. I just... I am appreciative of the fact that people bother to take the time to listen to me talk for so long. It's one of the few things I actually have just really wanted with my life, was to have people who wanted to listen to what I had to say.
I mean, that's, everyone wants to be heard, man. Everyone wants to be heard. Not everyone has the right message, but everyone wants to be heard. So.
Oh, I have had many wrong messages that people did not want to hear over my lifetime.
I can tell you that I have been requested for other podcasts, even on the Inside Lacrosse network. So I think it's going well for me personally, but you know, I think you're making a dent too. You're doing a good job. Except for this first thing we're talking about, which I think is really stupid, but go for it. Intro it.
So the first topic that we're going to discuss is one that has sort of been bothering me ever since the new iOS update came out, which I don't know when it was because I don't have an iPhone, so I don't really care or pay attention to when new iOS updates come out. But every time that it happens, people always complain about how there's no lacrosse emoji. And every time, it annoys me because, first of all, people always blame Apple, which is silly because, I guess, unless you only ever go on your iPhone, you have to realize that, like, emojis appear on Android phones and on computers and everywhere. It's not just Apple on the iPhone that controls emoji. And if you actually look into it, there is a international organization called the Unicode Consortium that publishes the standard for how, like, text and characters are expressed on computers, called Unicode, because the idea is that there's just should be one universal representation of how we express letters and characters as ones and zeros that computers actually understand. And so they're the ones who actually control what gets made into emoji. So if you want to blame anybody, instead of just waiting for the iOS update to come out, you can actually go ahead and look ahead of time and see, you know, what characters are being added to Unicode. This stuff gets determined years in advance. And so, well, maybe not years in advance, but months, many months in advance. And so it turns out that actually yesterday, it was published or revealed that somebody actually did put together a proposal for a lacrosse emoji. And I want to give a shout out. She's a social media person at Under Armour. Let me find her name. Nicole Bohorad, Bohorad. However you pronounce your last name. I'm sure that I just butchered it. But we give a shout out to Nicole, who spearheaded a proposal to the Unicode Consortium for lacrosse emoji in conjunction with, I think, someone from U.S. Lacrosse, someone from the Tuaratin Foundation, and maybe somebody else. So shout out to them as well. But somebody actually did something about it and proposed a lacrosse emoji. So we might actually be getting one at some point, probably not until late 2018. But there is the potential for it to happen, finally.
You know what I have to say to that?
I do know because you've already told me, but
I'm gonna have Clint Eastwood say it for me. Hold on, let me put it close to the mic.
Get off my lawn.
So get off my lawn. Don't care. I would rather have a emoji with a dude with a beard, so people will stop using the mustache one for me. Because I have a beard, not a mustache, and I find it really weird, and it makes me think that I look like my dad. So I don't want a lacrosse emoji. We don't deserve a lacrosse emoji. We're not there yet, guys. We're not there. I think it's a great – I know you think we are. We're not there. I hope to get there, but we're not there. This is not a discussion. I'm out.
That's a good point. That is – so I – more than I necessarily want a lacrosse emoji because I really don't use emojis that often. And so it really doesn't impact my life that much. I just want people to stop complaining about it. Because there are a lot, like, I guess, as someone who has a podcast and tweets a lot and complains about things, there are certain things that you can complain about that are not in your control. But interestingly enough, the lacrosse emoji is not one of them because anybody can submit a proposal to the Unicode Consortium for an emoji. Like, you don't have to have any qualifications. If you type it up, you can submit it. And so, the thing that does bother me with people complaining is, don't complain about stuff that you actually have the power to influence and to fix.
But, I will say this. If you had to pick an emoji for this podcast, I think it's pretty obvious the ones you would pick, right? Like, you would get the robot head, right? I feel like you would. It's not an insult. Okay. I think it's fair.
Okay. No, that's honestly, I didn't even realize there was a robot head emoji.
And I would probably get either the angry face or the, you know, yeah, probably just the angry face. Not the red one, the regular one. I think I'd just get the regular angry face. And that would be our podcast logo. So if anyone wants to make that into a logo that we can put onto iTunes, that would be great. Really appreciate it.
We should talk to Matt Cain.
I will. I'm going to. Matt Cain, creative director for Inside the Cross.
Yeah, yeah. For those of you, who don't, which is probably 99% of people listening that Matt Cain, who has a fantastic beard, by the way, we should mention that.
He's on Team Beard Emoji, too. I know he is.
Oh, I mean, more than – both of us are rocking rather short beards at the moment, I believe. I guess I did just see you in our video chat before this.
Yes.
But Matt Cain has a legit full like Santa Claus, not white, but it's like that level of beard.
Yeah, he's many levels above us in beard. All right, so lacrosse emoji conclusion. I don't care. It annoys Patrick. Let's move.
No, it doesn't. No, I want it so that people stop complaining about it.
Okay.
And because they complained to the wrong person, and it's something you can do something about, and finally somebody did instead of complaining.
Okay, fair enough.
The next bit of news that we wanted to cover is Navy midfielder Casey Rees is out for the season with some kind of injury. He suffered non-contact, which you got to assume is probably a knee injury, you know, some kind of Achilles, ACL, MCL type tear, something, hopefully not something bad, but when you are out for the season from a non-contact injury in 3 months before the season starts, you have to assume it's something along those lines.
Generally very serious, yeah.
Yes. So, best wishes to him in his recovery. We hope that all goes well, and he is back for next season. He was only a sophomore this year, so he will have one more year in 2018 to come back as a senior. But any thoughts on what this means for Navy and kind of the national
goals.
Conversation where they fall?
Less goals, so they fall. And they already don't have a ton of them, so now they have less. I think it's a big impact for a team like that really does rely on, you know, his ability to create scoring opportunities.
Yeah, and I think, and especially they lost kind of the quarterback of their offense, Patrick Kina, and one of their other starting attackmen, and so it's they were already had some losses on the offensive end. But I think, I mean, Navy is a team that is going to go as far as their defense can carry them, and so that's not going to change.
That's true.
But I think it does. It does put. It puts a lot of pressure on sophomore midfielder now, Grayson Terrain. And one of my favorite attackmen to watch play, potentially probably the biggest. If he's not the biggest dodging attackman out there, he's got to be close. Jack Ray.
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to put a lot of pressure on those two guys to run the offense and create some scoring opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, I've already had my kind of say on this. I think that Navy's rise last year had a lot to do with the absolute plummeting of the Patriot League in terms of, you know, overall balance as a league. I think that they had a lot of teams that kind of couldn't put together a full season worth of very positive performances. And I think Navy was able to capitalize on a lot of the people in their conference, you know, not being up to snuff with their talent and their ability, whether it's injuries, a lot of teams were hit by injuries last year, or just guys, you know, not panning out, or, you know, not being able to score goals. I mean, you know, you have super defensive teams like Bucknell, Colgate kind of went downhill a little bit last year. I think BU had a ton of talent and didn't capitalize. I mean, at Lehigh, same thing. Lehigh got ravaged by injuries. But I don't know. I'm not a big Navy guy. I watched that game last year when they played Hopkins, and it's like the worst officiated game I think I saw all year. And like they kept calling late hits on Navy that weren't late hits and stuff like that. And if Navy runs into that this year and keeps being officiated tightly, like, they're in trouble because they're not great on man down, and they also are not great with the ball. So I think this is a huge blow to them, missing out on Rees. I think it's a huge blow, and they need, you know, they're on the cover of the next issue of Inside Lacrosse, you know? I hope we're not cursing people. You think we're cursing people? We're not cursing people, right?
No. No, I so the thing about cover curses in general is that it's just a case of sample bias.
Okay.
That when you put people on the cover, it's because their at their relative peak, usually. And so, for the most part, they only have one place to go, and that's down.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't put people who... Like, Casey Reese is not going to be on the cover of Inside Lacrosse 4 months from now, because he's out for the season with a knee injury. You know?
Yeah.
You put people who are healthy and who have potentially outperformed expectations recently in the past, like Navy. So they pretty much are either going to continue to outpace expectations or return back to the to expectations are slightly below them. And so just odds are people who are on the cover have their best days behind them, because that's what got them onto the cover, was having their best days.
Sure. And you want to talk about how, you know, missing him also impacts, like, kind of the midfield duo question, right? And all of NCAA lacrosse?
Yeah, well, we mentioned it with and something I tweeted about, that with Grayson Terrain, who's their other, was a freshman last year, coming back for his sophomore year, their other, you know, really talented midfielder, is just a dynamic playmaking athlete between the lines and on the offensive end. And I think this is a big impact because for them as an offense, because it means with Casey Reese out, that he's going to see a lot of long pulls. And so you went from a situation where teams either had to pick which one of them to put the pull on, and then you can run your offense through the other guy, or teams are forced to double pull your midfield, which creates problems in itself. So you kind of have a way, you have an obvious strategy from which to kind of attack the defense on the offensive end. And now with him out, you know, that really hurts your options.
Right. Well, if this were to happen to another team, which other kind of duo would it be the most devastating to and affect their team the most?
That's a good question. And it's one I sort of attempted to answer on Twitter when I tweeted about it. And I came up with my top four, I guess, which guy do you pull midfield duos were UNC with Simpson and Tagliaferri, Ohio State with John Kelly and Johnny Pearson, Towson with Mike Lynch and John Mazza, and Hopkins was my number one pick. With you're going to have a midfield of Crawley, Connor Reed, and Joel Tinney.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And all those guys, I think you can make a case for pulling any of the three of them.
Yeah, I would definitely. Yeah, I think you would want to double pull that Hopkins midfield for sure. Out of all those,
yes. Oh yeah, yeah. I think you're going to want to.
Yeah. But again, we'll see. Season's closer than we think. Still a couple months away.
Yeah, and the reason I guess the two obvious ones that I skipped, which I didn't include in that, are the Syracuse midfield of Salcido and Mariano, and the Denver midfield of Pace and Miller.
Yeah,
and I think those are arguably better duos. Or no, I mean, they're not arguably. They probably are. Those are probably the best two pairs of midfielders in the country. But I think in both cases, I think it's fairly obvious that you put the poll on. I think you put a poll on Salcido and on Miller. And I don't really think there's that much of a question.
Okay. And that's based on like what, like assist numbers and how and the, their roles.
Well,
in the offense?
Yeah, in the case of Syracuse, yeah, Salcido had 24 assists and Mariano only had 11. That I think you're much better off. Like, you're going to have to slide to those guys if they're against short sticks. And I would much rather slide from Salcido to Mariano than slide from Mariano to Salcido.
Yeah, but don't you think those assists for Salcido are because he didn't get the pull early on?
But both of them, the teams pulled Derek DeJoe for, like, the first seven games.
Right.
In retrospect, it's a really stunning thing. If you go back and look at, like, until halfway through the season... Because he had a hot start. Like, I think at the beginning of your team didn't know who to pull.
Right.
And Derek DeJoe had, like, two or three really good games. And then everybody started putting the pull on him. And then Salcido and Mariano both ended up having much better seasons.
Yeah, I also think DeJoe is a much more predictable player than those other two. I think they're a little bit more... Salcido and Mariano are a little bit more, I guess, slippery is the word I would use for both of them. I mean, I think Salcido's a little slicker than Mariano, but Mariano... always is looking for his shot. Always.
Yeah, well, that's why that I think you are more comfortable sliding to him is I think he's... I mean, Salcido is more of a pass-first guy. That actually his sophomore year, you know, a year ago, he had 5 assists and no goals running on the second midfield.
Okay.
And so I think he's a guy... that you don't want to have to slide to.
Hmm.
I mean, you're going to, because he's gonna run by your defensive midfielder, especially if it's a short stick. You have to, but I think he's a guy that's a feed first kind of guy, and Mariano is definitely a shoot first kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean at Cuse, he is. I think at UMass when he started, he was a little bit more reticent to do that because I think, you know, that doesn't fit well with Canella's system, and it's one of the reasons he left, and why everyone at UMass hates him. But whatever, we don't have to get into that. Sorry. All the UMass guys always like send me private messages like, don't say anything about Mariano. All these grizzled UMass guys, they're all upset about everything all the time. I'm sorry your team's not good, guys. I want it to be good, too. There's an obvious joke there. I'm not making it. Go.
Okay, I guess I was gonna say, I think we're done. We're gonna move on to the next thing. I think we're ready.
Ooh,
ready.
Yes. This is great.
Yeah, so this is an idea. This is, I think, is gonna go well, but there's the potential it could be a catastrophic disaster. but we're gonna try it anyways. Is both of us have yet to vote in Inside Lacrosse's in the 2016 Laxies.
Right.
And so we're going to do it live on the podcast, go question by question.
We're going to do it quick, though. Quick.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I think for some of them, there's not that much discussion. And other ones, we just have no idea. So discuss we can't discuss anything. But the first one, D1 Men's Player of the Year. Chris Cloutier from North Carolina, Miles Jones, Dylan Malloy, Matt Landis, Pat Spencer.
Dylan Malloy for me.
Yeah, I think it's the thing about these, I think the question is really – It's the same question as who should win the Tuaraton, isn't it?
I mean, there's a great GIF out there of Dylan Malloy as the human Tonka truck that you made. So, and then I named
it. It's a Photoshop.
Photoshop, sorry. Either way, it's out there. It's great. Yeah. I love Dylan Malloy. Everyone knows it. We were driving the Brown bandwagon before anybody else.
Oh, I think, yeah, if you're going to accuse us of bias, I think that accusing us of bias towards Brown is probably the most accurate.
I'm so cool with that. I don't even care. I'm so cool with that. All right, let's go quick. D1 Women's Player of the Year. Well, you don't have to list them. Just say yours.
Okay, I think for the same reason, I think it's got to be Taylor Cummings, doesn't it?
I'm picking Kayla Traynor because her highlights are dope.
That's the one reservation that I have is Taylor Cummings might be like a better player if you're trying to win games, but if you're just trying to watch highlights, like clips on social media, there's no question that Kayla Traynor has much better highlights.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. D2 Men's Player of the Year. We gotta go. We gotta make it quick. There's a lot of categories,
okay.
Man.
Okay. I'm not gonna lie. Of these guys, the only one that I could pick out of a lineup is Mike Messenger.
I am also going with Messenger, but I considered Sal Tuttle just for the all-encompassing volume of his work at Adelphi and how much he had to do for that team in the last 4 years. But in the end, going with Messenger. Agree.
Okay.
You got the next one?
D2 Women's Player of the Year.
I have no idea. I voted for the one from the school I've never heard of. Emily Santoli from Florida Southern.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with Jacqueline Jahelka just because that's, I think, the best name.
Well, also her brother's pretty good.
That's
why you recognize
it. I didn't think
it.
Of that.
D3 Men's Player of the Year. Wow. This one's actually tough for me. I originally had Matt Hossack from RIT and then changed it to John Upgren from Tufts because, again, this is a highlight pick. Upgren's highlights are amazing. He just does not care. Just shoots from wherever he is, back to the goal, side to the goal, on the ground. Doesn't matter. Love his game. He's played a couple games for the Cannons, and he has like one highlight for them, I think. But I mean, I just like watching him play at Tufts for a while. I'm going with Upgren. Who you got?
I'm gonna go with Preston Dabbs, just because for a D-mid to get the kind of recognition that he has. I feel like if you just compensate for anti-D-mid bias, it has to be him.
He's also not that big. I mean, that's why he didn't get drafted in MLL, by the way. Because I talked to GMs and coaches. They said he was too small.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's exactly why BJ Grill stopped Denver from winning the championship.
Right. Right. But hey, it's not like I told Denver who to pick in all their drafts. D3 Women's Player of the Year. I think I guessed on this one too, but Elizabeth Morrison from TCNJ. I'm not really sure what that is even, but her stats are insane from what I can see here. Who you got?
I'm not gonna lie, haven't looked at this until now. So I think I might just pick how about Paige Moriarty from Franklin and Marshall?
Alrighty. Good call. Ooh, I wrote these. MLL Player of the Year.
Player of the Year.
Ooh. Tommy, how's the peeping, Tommy? Tommy Schreiber, Ohio Machine. Boom.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Tom Schreiber.
Got to be.
I think he was the MVP for a reason. Also interesting that nobody from the league champions.
Yeah, it's because they won with team, man. They won with team.
Yeah, and two of these guys didn't even get their teams to the playoffs.
True. True. NLL Player of the Year. I went home bias. I'm wearing a Black Wolves New Era hat right now. Sean Evans is my pick.
Oh, yeah, but you're wrong. It's got to be Dane Smith.
I know.
Like, there's no... That's,
I know,
not,
that's a bias pick. I'm allowed to bias. It's my vote. Don't tell me
to
vote, man.
It's not a debatable question. Okay, okay. Like, there's... That's just one, though, where there, like, there is a right answer, and it's... And it's Dane Smith.
That is your opinion.
Because, no, it's like, see, you can say that it's an opinion, but it's, like, this isn't, there's not an opinion involved. It's just, it's an objective fact.
Okay, well, who won the championship? Was it the Bandits? Because I don't think it was.
No, it was the Rush.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the team, it wasn't the guy whose team you picked either.
Hey, I'm just saying. I said it was a biased pick. Just let me have the biased pick. All right. Next up, UWLX Player of the Year. I'm going back with Kayla Traynor again. Also plays for the Boston team, so that's a definite biased pick for me as well.
Yeah. I think it's... So I'm going to go with Alyssa Leonard because I'm going to go here. I thought about her and... I think Dana Doby did some good stuff for the ride, but I'm going to go with, I think in the end, it's the championship bias.
Okay.
Long Island Sound were the champions. And so I'm going to go with Alyssa Leonard.
All right. Next up, Boys High School Player of the Year. Good to be honest. Need to read this. You give yours first.
So the two guys that I guess I didn't watch any of them play, like, actually in their real high school games. But the two guys that stand out to me from what I saw of them in the U19, I think it's between Michael Sowers and Jeff Teat.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Okay. Who you got?
And I'm going to go with Michael Sowers just because 120 assists is absurd.
Yeah. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with Teat. Just because I'm excited to see what he does this year for Cornell. Girls High School Player of the Year. This is going to be who... I can't pick someone from New Jersey. Sorry, no offense. Lizzie Colson, Manchester Valley, because Manchester is a city in New Hampshire. This is how my voting goes, by the way. I literally, if I don't know the topic, I'm just going to pick... based on something else.
Yeah, let's...
So go ahead.
I mean, the LAC season in general, I feel like nobody can have an informed opinion about all of the categories.
It would be very difficult.
There's just no way. It's just too many different... but I'm going to go with here. This is the I've heard of you bias. I think I remember Brittany Griffin in the Under Armour game.
Yes.
So I'm going to pick her.
All right. Boys High School Team of the Year. Who you got?
I think it's gotta be the Hill Academy, doesn't it?
Does it?
I think they're the best team, weren't they?
I mean, they're Canadian. I don't know if that like qualifies you or disqualifies you. I'm just saying they are Canadian. And they're like a super team. So.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously have that advantage of being, you know, a super team. But super teams aren't always the best team in the country.
Yeah, that's why I'm going with Victor. Just because that people, I mean, people in Baltimore always think that the Baltimore system is the toughest and has the best teams. And that may be true, but upstate New York is up there. It's number two or number three or number one, depending on, you know, where you're coming from. I know there's just tons of talent in upstate New York, and I'm just going to go with Victor just because I think it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Yeah, we have very, very detailed knowledge of the national high school lacrosse scene from us, as you can tell.
It's not my beat, man. But hey, this is the Laxes. We're just voting. Girls high school team of the year. Who you got?
I think the choice is either got to be McDonough, because I think they were the kind of consensus best team, or Christian Brothers Academy for no reason other than I think that's where Rick Beardsley coaches.
That's probably true. I think you know, it's funny, like I know we said we don't do a ton of you know, high school stuff, but in terms of like my work with the recruiting and the Isle events, I saw a lot of great Garden City talent, man. So I'm gonna go with Garden City just based on the talent that they've produced that I've seen this year in person. It's the only thing I'm basing that. Ooh, controversial one coming up here. Men's coach of the year.
Oh. Yes.
Ooh, we just talked about this. Are you gonna change your vote?
Who did you think I voted for when we talked about this before?
I thought you were gonna vote for Lars, no?
Yeah, I was. That I was.
Okay. Did Evan Connell change your mind after the podcast?
No, because I think that I guess to put it in sort of the most succinct way to put it is that one of these coaches left to go coach somewhere else because he did so well, and with the other one there was no like he's almost in some ways staying because he did so well. That I think relative to expectations, I think it's got to be Lars Tiffany.
I really want to vote for Lars here, but I got to say, North Carolina, for me, kind of came out of nowhere. After they lost to UMass, I'll admit it, I wrote them off. And the fact that they came back from that loss to win the national championship, that's big. I'm giving it to North Carolina. I'm giving it to Bresci. My mind was changed. I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay. I caught flack for it all year on Twitter for where I ranked North Carolina. I felt like it was just a hiccup.
Yeah.
A hiccup might be understating. It was
a shock.
I feel like I kept the faith. I believed in them from the start of the year, and I don't think I ever wrote them off.
All right. I can't claim that. Next up, Women's Coach of the Year. I'm going to go with the obvious choice here too, which is the sweep for North Carolina and Jenny Levy.
Okay. Yeah. I think she's, definitely could go there. The other one that I, am tempted is Lindsay Monday from USC.
Yeah.
Because I think getting to where they are, I mean, this is only the fourth year they've had a team. It's a relatively new team, and they're already looking like a national contender.
They were disrespected all year in the women's poll. As someone that votes in the women's poll, who had it taken away and give it back because I'm not allowed to vote for UNH anymore. but I definitely had them high, and I was always like, why are they not in there? And people just kind of don't respect them. So that's a good pick. Next up,
but now that I think about it, I am going to go with Jake.
Okay. now that I've convinced you to do that, or you've convinced yourself. Team of the year.
I said it was between the two of them.
Okay. Team of the year, no-brainer for me. I'm an MLL guy. The Outlaws were dead. I buried them. There's dirt on the shovel in my closet. They came out of the ground, and Zombie won that championship with total team effort and an amazing rookie goaltender in Jack Kelly. So for me, it's the Denver Outlaws. I know everyone's going to vote for North Carolina. North Carolina is going to win. Going with Denver. Rep your city.
Am I crazy? You don't want to pick Brown?
No, you're not. You're not crazy for that. That was my, to be honest, they're my second choice. But
okay,
I'm going Outlaws.
So I think I want to go with Brown. And it's not, I feel like it's not an anti-North Carolina bias. I want to vote for Brown.
All right. Men's okay. Highlight reel goal. This is, you're going to have to go online to check this out. I have to do, even though it's not really a feat of skill and it's more of a thing of chance, and I have an MLO bias, I'm going with Brody Merrill's 95-yard goal on John Galloway. Goalie of the year in the MLL.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, I think, though, the category is highlight reel goal of the year. It doesn't necessarily have to be – doesn't say, like, it's not most skillful goal of the
right.
year.
Right, it's highlight of the year, even though the shot and the camera work for this is atrocious. But, I mean, it's still awesome. I don't care.
Yeah, so I would say – I look at it, I throw out the back-to-back-to-back-to-back goal. Like, or sorry, not back, behind the back to behind the back goal from the Under Armour game. Throw that out. I think if you do it in an All-Star game with nothing on the line, it's hard for me to vote it as the highlight reel goal of the year.
Right.
I think the Nanacoke no look pass was awesome, but same thing, like they were up by like 10 goals against England.
Right.
So to me, I want to vote for the Miles Thompson behind the back. That top corner snipe.
Yeah, that was close for me. If I didn't have an MLL bias, I would vote for that one.
That, but just, they're all good goals, but that one, to do it, like, when you're for the Iroquois hosting the World Championships for the first time on a reservation, against Canada, who's, you know, was, I think has never lost an indoor game in the World Championships.
Right.
It was phenomenal. The stakes and the moments, yeah,
for
do
sure.
it for me.
For women's highlight of the year, I'm actually kind of psyched. There's two UWLX in here, highlights in here, and I'm going to go with Kemp-seated Trainer. I think that's kind of a no-brainer given the rest of these, to be honest. Although the UNC BTB is pretty dope, but I'm going with the other one.
Yeah, I think the UNC behind the back is definitely up there. That Kayla Trainer one, I think the between the legs goal.
Yeah. Yeah. The doggy one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that one is my favorite.
Oh man. Game of the year. Oh. I can't vote for two. Oh God. This is tough because this is clearly for me D1 versus MLL. And you know what? My MLL bias is not going to win here. It's really not. You were in the press box, right, for NCAA?
Yes.
The guy from UNC, I think he works in their sports information. When UNC scored the goal, he fell out of his chair. And I was, like, next to him. And it was unbelievable because I thought it was the shaking of the stadium, but it was the dude falling out of his chair. And then the stadium shook because it was kind of a delayed reaction. So I'm going with that as the game of the year. I thought it was amazing. You can check. Patrick and I did extensive articles on this game online back in May, and it was phenomenal. I can't. I want to pick Denver, Ohio. I do. I love you guys, but what an amazing finish to that game. So I'm going UNC Maryland.
Yeah, no, I think it's got to be the Division One. I think I agree that I think you have like the number of moments you had that Bernlohr save.
Yep.
You had both goalies making a huge save. You had the Zach Powers
diving
dive.
Out. Yeah. Oh, what a great
just the way the game ended. That it's the I think for all of the reasons that we talked about, you know, that UNC team and Joe Bresci as coach of the year and men's team of the year. I think for them to win that creating the moment.
Yeah.
I think that just adds to the magic of that game and why it should be game of the year. And it's the biggest stage in lacrosse. It's the game that the most people care about and the most people watch and the most people pay attention
to. And it was great. And it hasn't been great.
To have, yeah. Yes. So yes, to have that kind of game there.
It was big to have that. I had people that didn't know anything about lacrosse, and I told them I worked in lacrosse, and they'd be like, oh man, I saw that championship game. That was amazing. You know, and I'd be like, oh, you should watch more. Please watch more. So last one, I think we're winding up here. Personality of the year. I wrote these as well, as in addition to the MLL ones. I'm going to go with Greg from ECD, man. He got run over by Miles Jones for like entertainment purposes.
I know.
Like
that's, oh yeah.
Like you could have died, bro. You could have died. He's huge. That's scary.
Yeah. Have you ever watched Miles Jones up close and personal?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I highly recommend it if you ever get the opportunity. Just even watching him like do a shooting demo for kids from like 15 yards away, it's an experience.
Yeah.
And no, I think when you put it come at the king, you best not miss. I think it's got to be. I feel like he's the perpetual champion until
he's dethroned. Otherwise. Yeah. Oh, dethroned. Yeah, get it? Dethroned.
I believe it was actually my idea to put him in this with some lacrosse players last year.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how he didn't win, but.
Yeah, I think Rabel won, right? It was just votes.
Yeah, or, yeah. I,
it was
or
close
something.
Though. That was actually a close one. I saw the final results on that. All right, so that's was, our that's was. Our voting for the Laxies, guys. We're gonna wrap it up here in a little bit. We got two more things to talk about. One of these is kind of we're in the holiday season. It's mid December. You know, we're getting a little wistful, going back thinking about the best lacrosse gift we got on Christmas. And Patrick, what was the best thing you got growing up?
The most memorable one, when I was in seventh grade, I got a black OG Evo. Ooh. Or Evolution, as they called it, but by the full name back in the day before that the shorthand was popularized. And that was my first like top of the line head.
Wow, that's
that I ever got.
My favorite head of all time. I had a similar experience. I got the companion head to that because I grew up playing defense as a kid. I got the Revo. I got two of them. And full disclosure, Christmas is also my birthday, and so I get gypped, but also get double presents usually to make up for it. So I also got, and I still have this, an original STX first run titanium D-pole, which I still have in my closet. It's one of the few things that I carry with me every time I move somewhere. It's like one of the things I have to have with me. So that was kind of my most memorable thing. I remember getting it and knowing what it was because you can see it through the wrapping, like you can figure it out, and being excited and playing with it and not breaking it. At one point, I was just like, I can't break this. I have to retire this. It would be a crime to break this shaft. So that's why I still have it. But in that kind of, well, let's turn it around. What do you want now? What's your lacrosse gift now? Because like we can kind of get a lot of things, right? Like it's not really heads or shafts for either one of us. What do you think? What would you want lacrosse related for Christmas this year, 2016?
So something that is on my list of things that I sent, that I think one of my siblings is going to get me, it's not that magical or special of a thing, but it's something that I have wanted, but just never bothered to go actually get myself. I would need a GoPro clamp so I can put it on hook it up to the crossbar of a lacrosse net.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. That's affordable too. Mine's really expensive and I'm not going to get it, but I'm going to use this forum to ask for it. If anybody knows a guy who knows a guy, I want an Alfie Jacques original strung Woody. That's what I want. And I think it's just the best lacrosse gift, period, that just can't be – you can't just attain it. You can't walk into a store and buy it. It has to be made for you, and it has to – you have to appreciate it, and I feel like – I would really like that. I've met Alfie a few times. I've been to his shop. He's a super nice man. I would love to get a original Woody from him. They are very expensive, but they are very worth it. So that would be my wish. If we're talking Christmas, and you know, you can combo it Christmas birthday for me. So that means you can spend more money. That's all that means. Not that you have to.
I just want to say the other thing that I the more higher end I have wanted an MLL game worn signed jersey to frame and put on the wall.
Who would you want?
I don't know. I want somebody out there of the MLL of the MLL player. I want somebody to give one to me. It's a surprise.
I'll give you one. I got a couple.
No, it's got to come. I want one from a player. Like, excuse me, like with the Alfie Jacques stick, just having one is good, but what makes it, if you have one that was like made for you.
I get what you're
like,
saying.
Like that's the ultimate. And that's what I feel like with like that, it's, if you just having a, you know, signed jersey is one thing, but if you with someone that's signed like, you know, to you, that's,
I mean, I'm going to give you a tip on that. You got to stop telling pros that their drills suck. If that's what you want. I'm going to be real with you.
Honestly, I didn't.
I know you didn't. I'm just making a joke.
No, there was just in some cases, I didn't critique the drill. I actually liked that drill. I critiqued the execution of the drill by the player who was shown in a clip. And I think people got very confused.
That is also able to offend people, though. So I can see how they would not enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't, but I'm just saying, it has nothing to do with the drill or the player or what, you know, what was going on. And in some cases, another incident that I think you might be referring to, part of my critique of the drill was it's not effective if you don't have, like, an MLL caliber player, that kind of coach there who's actually providing instruction.
Okay.
That the drill itself doesn't it's a drill that sets up coaching advice, but in the absence of that coaching advice, the drill itself doesn't necessarily help players.
Well, I can see what you're saying and I see what they're saying, so I'm gonna stay out of that argument.
Okay. Okay,
and I think we need to transition to our next and final topic.
Yes,
which is
MLL supplemental draft. Yes. Happened yesterday.
It did.
Afternoon.
It did.
And this is your definitely your area of expertise. So,
you didn't even read my article, you said.
I didn't. I well, because I.
Do you know how many people want to talk to me about my articles but haven't read them? 86%. I'm going with 86%. Like, oh man, hey, great article. Did you read it? Yeah, I read some of it. I'm sorry, man. I can't write short. I got to write long. I got to write 2,000 words.
But this, I guess, it's not that I don't want to read. I just haven't done it yet because I follow the draft and I like have some of my own thoughts.
How did you follow the draft?
So, like, I didn't through your Twitter.
Yeah. Not anyone else's.
Well, because you tweeted, you were the first one. You tweeted everything first.
Yeah, I did.
And with like names spelled correctly.
Yeah.
And
stuff. And if I spelled them wrong, due to time, I went back and corrected them.
Okay, yeah, or I guess not everyone, but I would guess that your accuracy was better than the other people.
Judging by how much editing I had to do on the list that I got, it was much more accurate. But yeah, I think overall, people ignore the subdraft a lot. Very few impact players go in the subdraft or stay on the roster all season. I think it's not really an exception, but I think there's probably like 10 players selected in this 115 player draft or whatever that will stick, which is more than usual. I mean, there have been years where guys that have been retired for 10 years were picked, or guys that haven't played in 5 years were picked number one overall. You know, it's things like that. And I don't think we saw any of that kind of, what do we say, shenanigans this year. And I think certain teams, you know, had to draft well. I mean, Rochester and Florida have to draft well. They have very thin rosters. They have their stars, but they don't have depth. So this is a very important draft for teams like that. I think Florida tried really hard to do that. They got Marty Bose, which I think is huge, even if they're going to trade him back to Boston or whatever. Marty Bose helps that team a lot just by, you know, wanting to play and having a drive to play lacrosse at the professional level. Will Garal as well. I mean, that was the guy everyone wanted. Callum Robinson going to Atlanta, that's the perfect team for him because they don't run a organized defense and he doesn't do well in an organized defense, so just let him loose. And he can do some damage. And then, you know, annually, Gareth Thule gets picked, you know, in the first round every year. Chesapeake got him this year. So I think those are, you know, if you want to read my full thoughts, it's on Inside the Cross right now. It's if you're a hardcore MLL person, it's an essential draft. If you're not super hardcore, but you want to see where some guys landed, it's worth checking out. But I can understand why people don't get into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh yeah. And that's one of the things, actually, one of the things that I think every year when this happens is why are so many guys made available in this draft, and why aren't teams allowed to protect more players? Because it seems like there's a bunch of names on here of guys who we know are going to play in games in the MLL. But I feel like they get shuffled around between so many teams.
It's an artificial construct, right? So this is another event that the MLL can have to give the MLL more pubs. So that's why it exists. I really think that's it. I honestly think that's the only reason it exists. I mean, I could be wrong.
Okay.
I've been wrong before. I doubt that I'm wrong about that. But, you know, I tried to give it as much attention as I could. I threw out a bunch of suggestions for guys. I even used one of your highlights for Tyler White in the post pre-draft. And, you know, some guys get mad they didn't get picked. Curtis Dixon didn't get picked here. Was a little sour about it on Twitter, right?
Well, yeah, I feel like if you can only get picked and then not play in a game so many times before you stop getting picked.
Yeah, it's you can't cry wolf the whole time. And then
And for Curtis Dixon, apparently that number was twice.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not like the thing is, like, there's guys that didn't get picked that are good, definitely good enough to play in the MLL. It's just maybe the MLL, the teams don't trust you, or you don't have a good relationship with a certain team that could use you, or someone's better than you at your particular position. I mean, there's a whole litany of things that contribute to you being picked in the updraft. I mean, For someone like me that has to kind of be involved with every nuance of the league to fully feel like I'm doing my job, like, it's definitely important to me, but I can totally see how it's not important to other people.
Yeah. I guess one other – so do you have a favorite – especially when you were talking about, like, rounds, you know, 7, 8, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, do you have a favorite sort of type of player that you think teams should draft?
In a draft like this, I mean, for impact-wise, I would say the last couple years, it's like a face-off guy. Just because, aside from Beast dominance, there's been a huge drop-off with a lot of the face-off guys on other teams. Like, I mean, Anthony Kelly's in this draft, so that'll tell you kind of all you need to know. Remember when Anthony Kelly and Greg Renling were easily the best two guys? And that was, like, what, 4 years ago? I think you're looking to get a guy like that can impact you in a special teams position. And I think the other version of that is a goalie. You know, I think there's a lot of – there's a dearth of goalie talent out there. And you got to try a lot of guys. And the problem with playing goalie in the MLL usually takes a while. You know, Jack Kelly's the exception that proves the rule last year for Denver. But it usually takes a while to adjust as a pro goalie versus a college goalie. And a lot of people think Gunnar Wald is, oh my God, how can he not be on there? Look at his numbers from college. And they're right. But, you know, my reaction to that is also look at the defense he played in front of at Bryant and look at the teams he played against and things like that. And it's an adjustment. It's not that he can't do it. It's just an adjustment period. And
also, yeah, I think for him though, for a guy like him, you also, like, last year, there was no training camp for him to go to. You didn't really have a chance to earn your way onto a team.
Right.
And that's what I was going to go with. Where I was going with that, it's something I tweeted, but the couple of guys that I really like, I think this is a big draft for, if you're going to gamble on guys with those later on picks, I think you want to gamble on guys who, for whatever reason, sort of weren't given a chance in college.
Yeah.
And not just like that, and two guys I highlighted that I think is sort of that not that they just like weren't given a chance for the teams, but played for smaller schools and sort of didn't get to initially get to show themselves, show what they could do against the big name players in, you know, for like ACC teams, is Zach Esser from UMBC. He was a 3-time first team All American East defender, for UMBC, and Paul Batetti from Detroit, who was a 3-time first team All MAC defender for Detroit Mercy. And so I think those, you have the potential of a couple guys who come in into the league with a chip on their shoulders, who want to prove that they can hang with all the guys who went to ACC schools, and the fact that they weren't recruited by those schools, you know, was a fluke, was a mistake.
Right. And then you get guys like Sean Maher, who is a Robert Morris guy, and he got picked by Florida in like a 6th round that I think is in a similar situation, but he has MLO experience playing for the Machine. And the Machine's old assistant, Tom Mariano, is now the head coach in Florida. So I think that's another guy that, you know, you pick that guy because he's going to mess somebody up. I mean, that's the other kind of guy you get in this draft is a real, you know, badass defenseman. Like just a mean dude. Or versatility. I mean, you go for characteristics more than players sometimes. And sometimes, you know, later in the rounds, there's guys on here that got picked for locker room. You know what I mean? Because they're good in a locker room.
Yeah.
Scrappy Bunk, good in a locker room. And by the way, Atlanta picked him. They need someone that's good in the locker room because their locker room sucks. Yeah, I said it. The team's run by a 4-year-old. Figure it out. Don't pick a guy number one and trade him 2 games in. Genius.
Yeah. No, and another guy fits the profile. I think Alex Spring from Bucknell.
Oh, you like him? What, he's small though, right? He's not big.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I feel like how much I feel like that's the most overrated aspect of defenders.
What, size?
Just it's so easy to observe. Like you look at a guy and you immediately know how big he is, and like if you have a choice, like, yeah, you should be bigger rather than smaller, but like,
yeah, no, I mean, there's also other guys too that I really like. Oberbeck going back to New York, they loved him when they had him in camp. They just didn't have a space for him, and they're gonna stash him. And you know, maybe he gets a shot somewhere, but he's perfect guy. He didn't do a ton in Atlanta, but there's a reason he got drafted in the expansion drafts, because he's a calming presence. You know, I mean, and you can see, you know, other guys that got picked that can do that as well. Kevin Cunningham, perfect example of that, went to Ohio, and Ohio needs some attack cover because those guys get the crap kicked out of them all season. And Cunningham's a perfect guy. You know, he's like the homeless man Steel Stanwyck anyway. Just put him in the backfield and let the ball cycle through him. He's very skilled at that. And he went the first round to Ohio, so that tells you how much they think of him. So. And he should have been Rookie of the Year when he came out, but there was a rule that he couldn't be because he wasn't drafted. But there's a ton of guys like that in this draft. I mean, if you're...
Yeah, the MLL Rookie of the Year rules make no sense. Stupid.
There's a lot of things I don't like about that. That's one of them. I mean, you know, you see a lot of guys... Logan Schuss, I mean, listen, if he decides to come back to the MLL, he's a great player, man. I really hope that he plays again.
That's another thing. That's another thing I would say with these picks is pick guys that you know are good, but you're unsure, have commitment questions. Right. Because then if he decides to play, you know, you can just slot him right into your starting lineup.
Sure. I think just pick best available, not necessarily need, but a lot of teams went need in the sub-draft. If you're going to do that, do it in the sub-draft. Don't do it in the college draft per se, because best player available, someone's going to want the guy you want. And this coming draft is going to be amazing. It's going to be one of the best classes since like 2006. It's going to be one of the best MLL classes ever, I think. It's going to be great. I'm really excited to see all the talent.
Building the hype. That's
what I do. I'm a hype man. Let's go. MLL draft. I know when it is, but I can't tell you. I can tell you it's not going to be in January, and it's not going to be in April, and it's not going to be in June.
Isn't that kind of weird? that we don't.
I know. I can't tell you, we don't but know I know
they haven't announced. I think you have.
I did. Pretty easy to figure out. But yeah, that's pretty much it this week, right? You got anything else for parting shots?
Oh no, I just want to say about Logan Schuss that I feel like there is the current Machine players like sporadically engage in Twitter campaigns to get him to come back.
Yes,
because they like him.
Yeah.
And I think it's the funniest thing to watch. Like, how long has it been since he's played in a game now?
2 years, right? 2 years.
At least.
Yeah.
And the Machine is always hanging on to his rights.
Yeah, they picked him up again.
Just in case.
Just in case. He is the most
just
Canadian.
Just in case he wants to come
I
back.
I said this in my preview. He is the most Canadian. The most. No one gets more Canadian than Logan Schuss. He worked on like a fishing boat. That's like the most Canadian thing I can think of. Besides, like, scaling mountains, like being a Mountie, like being part of the armed forces and riding a horse. I don't know. I don't know what Canadians do, man. To be honest.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to doing my impression, though.
Okay, yes. Now that you've admitted you don't really know what Canadians do, I'm sure everybody is thrilled to hear your impression.
They buy their milk in bags. That's all I know. They buy their milk in bags.
We maybe need to have some Canadians on as guests to explain to you about you. Like, you live so close to Canada.
I basically live in Canada. I mean, let's be real. I basically live in Canada, but I assume it's kind of like everything I do, but with like less powerful internet and a worse Netflix assortment, right? And more hockey.
I mean. Potentially, sounds like you mostly just learn about Canada from following Canadians on Twitter.
Yeah. It might not be the most educational way to go about it, for sure.
But yeah, anyways, I think we are ready to wrap things up. Okay. Well, I am Patrick McEwen, a.k.a. the Lacrosse Film Room Guy. You can follow me on Twitter and Snapchat at Lax Film Room, and on Instagram and YouTube at Lacrosse Film Room.
I am Kyle Devitt. I am the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse. You can follow me on Twitter at the Kyle Devitt and Instagram at the Kyle Devitt, eh?
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you soon, probably next week. Bye.
Yeah, no do to boot it.